Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thanks, and welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Today, we're talking about trademarks and what it means if you're going to have an athlete brand. You're going to want to think about some of these things we're going to talk about today. So, joining me today is going to be Justin Clark. He is a managing attorney at J. Clark Law Firm, PLLC, and based out of Arizona, and really excited to talk with him as we talk about on the podcast quite a bit. With name, image, and likeness opportunities, there are certainly a lot of rules and things you're going to want to know when it comes to intellectual property and, of course, trademarks. So, with over a decade of experience in trademark law, Justin assists businesses in identifying opportunities for brand protection and enforcement to build significant value for the business. His focus includes trademark identification, registration, development, and value enhancement. From the beginning stages of brand selection through the rollout of a sophisticated licensing program, he can guide a business through every step of the trademark process. He's also an amateur athlete, loves snowboarding, ice hockey, and weightlifting. He played ice hockey in high school and college, but he says these days he's more of a weekend warrior. We love weekend warriors here on the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. And when he's not in the office, you can find him certainly in his home gym doing exercises and certainly doing a lot of exercise out there in Arizona. And jealous that you're out there. And welcome in, Justin, on the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So I always like to start with helping our audience identify kind of how you got into this business and what really drives your passion, especially in the field that you are.
Yeah. So in a word, I think business and entrepreneurship is how I kind of got interested in law to begin with. It's what made me decide to go into the law school. A lot of people might think, well, when you're young and you have lofty ambitions about justice and, you know, right and wrong, this sort of thing, that's what kind of pushes you to go to law school. But I was more interested in kind of the practical side of law and how it can impact our everyday lives, businesses, those sorts of things. So my background is actually in entrepreneurship. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Dad owned a business that I was fortunate enough to be able to work at. I did everything from clean the floors all the way up to sales and marketing. Sales and marketing is actually what kind of got me my first exposure to trademarks, whether I knew it or not at the time. And from there, I just kind of went to law school. I went to ASU, Arizona State University undergrad, and then again for law school. And it was there that I kind of found my trademark niche, so to speak. Got a job working for a company that had a pretty nice portfolio trademarks, but they needed kind of to fill it out a little more. They brought me in as a law clerk, and that's where I kind of learned the ropes, trademarking and all the different ways that trademarks can be used, protected, licensed, enforced, and really how to build value. There's a lot of value that I didn't realize trademarks can add to a business until I was fighting in the trenches, learning about this thing called intangible assets and goodwill, all of which is kind of bottled up in a trademark. And yeah. So, yeah, that's where I've been for the past 12 years, and it's great. I love it. I get to set my own hours as my own owner of the firm. It's great. I've met a lot of great people, and I love working with all kinds of clients. I have clients that range in kind of size from mom and pops all the way up to large Fortune 1000 companies. And it spans the gambit from technology companies to athletes, to owners of gyms, just all sorts of different profiles, which is great because I like to learn as much about different areas of business as I can. And I learn something new every week, maybe not every day, but hopefully someday. But yeah, every week, something new, which is why I love working with entrepreneurs and enterprising individuals.
Well, it certainly seems like athletes are learning something new every day when it relates to name, image, and likeness, which obviously is going to be an important piece of an athlete's brand. And one of the reasons why I wanted to hop on with you to talk about some of the ways, maybe you can talk about this, Justin, that you think athletes might not even realize that they have the potential to trademark things like their logo or a design of a t-shirt that they might create, and some of the things or maybe ways that you've seen athletes using trademarks so far in the work that you've done.
Yes, and it's quite interesting looking at the progression and history of trademarks in sports in particular. Trademarks in sports weren't really a thing until about 40 or 50 years ago. I mean, trademarks have been around for a long time. Companies have been using them for centuries. But the teams, sports teams in particular, were the first ones that started trademarking kind of in the 1960s, 1970s, where you had these professional sports organizations like the National Football League, and they would encourage teams to start protecting, you know, the names of their teams. I mean, it sounds really basic. Nowadays, that would be kind of before you even start a team or form found the team, you'd be putting the protection on the name. But that didn't really start until the 70s. And it's really evolved over the years to incorporate everything from a name to a logo, even end zone celebration dances now. Kind of a cutting edge area, as we call it in the trademark realm. But yeah, so a trademark is, it can be anything. It can be a name, a design, even a movie or a sound. And it can be put on just about anything. You can protect that trademark on one thing or several things. It could be protecting information, like if you're giving out information as an athlete, let's say you're teaching people about physical fitness or something, maybe you own a gym, you know, putting on information, you put your name on that or your logo, you protect that name or logo with that type of service. If you're an athlete, obviously merchandising is very important for building your kind of, I'll call it your licensable value. So you would protect your name or logo on those items. And if you're talking about such things as like end zone dances, I mean, that you could probably put that on a shirt as well.
Yeah, you got me peaked at end zone. We got to talk about end zone dances. So what are you referring to, and how would that relate to a football athlete, and how would or when would this apply?
Yeah, so the way you get a trademark is, it's interesting because some people assume, well, if somebody creates a trademark, they own the trademark. Well, not necessarily. A trademark is created once you start putting it on goods or services, or when you have a plan, what we call in the trademark kind of filing realm is an intent to use that trademark on goods or services. So if let's say somebody styles on Twitter or something, let's say an athlete performs a play. I'm thinking of Kyler Murray because I'm, you know, in Arizona.
Yeah.
And there was a game in 2020 where he launched a Hail Mary pass. It was, I think it was the Buffalo Bills. It was a very dramatic last minute play that kind of ended the game. And I think,
yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was deemed, I think Twitter, someone on Twitter or one of the social media platforms deemed it the Hail Murray.
All right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that immediately became trademark fodder. So the interesting thing about trademarks is if it's created, let's say, but social media buzz, and the athlete whose namesake it is wants to get that for their own trademark, they can file that as long as they have a plan to kind of put it on. Let's say Kyler Murray wanted to put the Hail Murray on shirts, or the Arizona right. Cardinals wanted to hand out towels or something that people wave around when Cardinals are, you know, more often than not behind in the fourth quarter out of the team, you know,
yeah.
something like that. So that would be one example. But the end zone dance in particular, I think, I'm trying to think, Terrell Owens always had very
animated end
zone antics. So if he, let's say he had the, I think there was one time where he had a cell phone or something.
He took it out or whatever.
So that kind of maybe running around to the goalpost and grabbing the phone and dialing up, you know, who knows what. That sort of, I guess, dance applied to, it's hard to conceptualize what he would apply that to, but let's say he wanted to put out a shirt that showed him kind of going
calling through, somebody or something.
Yeah. Like a hologram shirt or something.
Yeah.
That would be a very impressive trademark. But it's something that we're seeing more athletes do nowadays. They're trademarking or trying to trademark everything under the sun.
So, but let me ask this question. If he does that dance or it is memorable using the cell phone, like he goes and he picks it up or whatever he's going to do, there are other athletes then that could still do that. But what does he own then if he wants to own a end zone dance? Like, what is his protection? Yeah.
He would own the sequence or the image of that dance, and he'd be able to stop other people from using it, or if they use it, collect some kind of license fee from them.
So he'd have to buy that trade. He'd have to buy that sequence and image to be able to do that at the trademark office. And then he could actually file suits, I guess, against other athletes that may try to do the exact same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly out there in the realm of trademarking. It's not the lowest hanging fruit. I mean, when you're an athlete, the lowest hanging fruit is probably your name, a logo that you have, and maybe, I'm trying to think of it, maybe some phrases that you use, you know, like Shaquille O'Neal is like the Shaq. If he were to use that often enough and wanted to put that on shirts, or his agent wanted to, you know, work with Nike to license that out and get shirts made with the Shaq on it, that would be certainly easier to protect at the trademark office than, you know, like an end zone dance or something.
Right. Let me ask this question. This one I've seen come up more frequently is gyms. So, for example, an athlete may go work out at a gym. And that athlete then would be shown on their social media accounts for the gym. And the gym would say, hey, take a look at, you know, superstar athlete, you know, Jill Smith. And all of a sudden, then someone's, you know, looking obviously at that post. And that's, you know, the gym marketing that, you know, Jill is there. She's a client. She's a high, you know, profile female athlete, whatever it may be. And that athlete is essentially having their name, image, and likeness being used by their local gym or their local trainer. And my feeling on that is that that's exactly why you would do a name, image, and likeness deal, is to make sure that you are getting compensated for that company or that gym using your name, image, and likeness, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And Greg, I think in that case, if I were advising that athlete, I think I would tell them, first of all, let's look at getting your name protected and putting it on, you know, services or goods. In this case, let's say the athlete has a workout program, or maybe they don't have one yet, but they're looking at putting one together, a workout program and nutrition plan. I mean, nowadays, it's so easy to just go and create an Instagram account and get buku followers. And you could use that as the basis for kind of pushing out your workout plan. Even if you're not selling it, I mean, as long as you're using it, I think that's what's most important here. And if you're that athlete who's going out and working at gyms and they're taking your image and putting it up there, I mean, there's two issues there. There's the trademark issue potentially of them using your name and piggybacking off of that goodwill. And there's also the likeness itself. And likeness is kind of a separate protectable interest, typically protected under state laws as opposed to federal trademark laws. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, that athlete may, you know, have a claim against the gym for use of their likeness.
Because they could tell them to, technically they could tell them, please don't post photos of me doing my workouts on your gym social media account. They would have the right to do that.
They would, right.
Yep.
And the gym, so, yeah. Yeah, the gym could tell them, you know, sorry, we're going to do it anyways. It's a First Amendment right. I mean, that's a whole thorny kind of area as well, whether a third party can use, you know, the name of an athlete because it's a protected by First Amendment speech, let's say for like commentary purposes, or just because it's a newsworthy event. I mean, sometimes these bigger companies get around these potentially thorny trademark and likeness issues by calling out the First Amendment. Doesn't work every time, but it, you know, it's very fact sensitive in terms of will that use be covered by the First Amendment, or is it an infringing use? And the athlete has the basis for telling the gym to stop, basically.
Okay, interesting. All right, so that's one thing I've seen. Let's also dive into merch, okay? Because that's a hot topic right now for a lot of athletes. If they go and create a shirt or a design, and then they have it produced by, you know, many of these merchandise companies right now, in addition to thinking that it's cool, which it is, a lot of these designs are awesome. I love the creativity of these athletes. I just don't want to see them end up going, oh my goodness, I didn't get that protected. Oh, I didn't think about that I should have done this, because then some other athlete looks at it online and goes, oh, well, I could do that. That looks like a cool thing. And then they go and they take it and they get it trademarked instead. Is that a situation that could play out? And also, what should that athlete be thinking about when they do create their athlete logo or a shirt to make sure they're protecting that likeness, you know, of that design?
Yeah, I think it comes down to a lot of foresight and strategic planning. When you're an athlete, your kind of sole focus is, you know, your game and your training. You're not really thinking about all these other possible auxiliary miscellaneous issues like branding and getting my name out there. I mean, you want to get scouted, you want to get drafted, you want to perform at your highest level. That's why I think you need a team of people to really help you. First of all, realize what your potential is. And second of all, to implement that plan. So for trademarking, for example, the first step I always like to walk through with people is just take an inventory of all the different items or services that I think they could be offering under their brand. And if they have a couple brands, you know, do that for each brand. So if you're an athlete, I think your name is probably something you want to look at protecting. A lot of people wonder why you need to file a trademark on your own name. And for some, you know, it's harder potentially, like if your name is like Tom Smith, as opposed to that athlete who plays for the Bucks, Giannis. I can't pronounce his last name.
Yeah, no worries. It was unique, obviously, right? So that's the whole point. It's very unique. Yeah.
But I think the name is important. A lot of athletes, when they're starting out, may not have a logo. It's not really something as an individual that you spend a lot of time working on, unless you have a business that's solely devoted to selling whatever you're offering. But I, you know, I would maybe work with a PR firm or marketing firm to come up with a logo. Some logos are generated on the fly. For example, the tight end who played for the Patriots, Gronkowski,
yeah,
had a distinctive logo where he was spiking the ball.
Yeah.
And Nike actually ended up going after him because they thought it looked a little too similar to their, that they have a logo, I think, of Jordan going through the air ball. But
yeah, the Jumpman logo. Yeah.
Yeah, the Jumpman logo. Right. So
they thought it was similar to that. Oh,
Right. Well, when you're Nike, you can kind of throw your weight around.
Okay.
Interesting. I think, yeah. So that's an example of a logo that you don't really know about up front when you're an athlete. It's something that spontaneously is created during your play. But if you do have a logo, obviously, what are you going to put that logo on? Is it going to be shirts? Are you going to be giving out information online? Maybe you just have a website and all you're doing is providing information about let's say the sports that you play or something, or you're offering some commentary. I mean, you don't have to offer necessarily the structured service. I think providing any type of information, and it could just be news, is a service, and you should seriously think about protecting that, because that's one way to get your foot in the door and make sure that third parties aren't out there, you know, trying to take your name and use it for their own purposes, or design some other logo
like similar to it or whatever. Yeah.
And start running with that, because trademark law, it's all about who gets there first, who's in the marketplace first, or who files their trademark first.
Right.
So that's why doing due diligence up front, understanding what your logo and identity is and how you're going to use it, is so important.
And so one of the things I see with athletes is cost, right? So then that's the next thing. So they could be an elite, you know, athlete that's a professional football player, or they may be a new freshman college athlete and they're ready to do name, image, and likeness opportunities. They're always saying, you know, well, how much is this going to cost? So right. In your mind, how much does something like this cost, so that we can educate the, you know, listeners on if it costs more than this, that's probably not, you know, what you want to be doing. You know, like, give us just a general ballpark, maybe, of even some of what you do, you know, and what that costs.
So when we talk about trademarking protection, trademarking is kind of a faux pas. It's trademark registration. But that's the formal phrase for describing it. There's two components to any kind of trademark registration service, and that's what does the trademark office charge to file the application, and what does the attorney who's filing the application charge? And the trademark office, your filing fee is anywhere from $250 to $350, depending on the type of option you select when you file the trademark. There's a couple different options. And that's per class of goods and services. So if you're filing an application as an athlete, let's say you want shirts, and then you also want to sell like toy footballs or something, those are two different categories. So your fee is going to be, let's say you do the lower cost option and it's $250. So it's going to be $250 for the clothing and then $250 for the toy footballs. So that's rolled into one. So that would be $500 for those two applications. But then you add on the attorney fees. And attorney fees can range anywhere, depending on your market. I mean, bigger cities, LA, Chicago, New York, you're going to pay more because everything there just costs more. Or if you're in a smaller town, I mean, Phoenix is kind of a smaller town relatively. So attorneys out here don't charge as much. But attorney fees are going to range anywhere from $750 to $2,000 to do, you know, a trademark filing. So, you know, it can get expensive. Those are scary numbers if you're an athlete and you're just starting out.
Especially
trademarking isn't really something it's not on your radar, so to speak, as something really important. I mean, certainly your trainer and your agent are probably higher up on that list in terms of your expenses. It's something that when you get serious enough about entering the marketplace and you have, let's say, a plan for using your name, or you've signed your contract with, let's say, a team or with the college, then it's something probably worth looking at that point, because your potential for getting into the marketplace and having your name likeness used has gone up, you know, at that point. So it's probably worth looking at and at least talking with an attorney. And I mean, obviously, if you can file trademark applications yourself, I wouldn't advise doing that, of course, because there's a lot of pitfalls in the application process. But an attorney, a trademark attorney, or an attorney who knows the ins and outs of trademarking is definitely worth their salt.
Okay.
So, I mean,
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I right there with you. I can definitely see how that would play out, especially if that athlete goes on to have an amazing career. Obviously, we've just seen what happened with the movie Air and everything there. So let's also go down as we kind of wrap up here. I would love to hear your best advice, kind of maybe from some of the stories you've seen or, you know, examples of advice for athletes related to their name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, so based on what I've seen kind of in my experience and clients I've represented, particularly in the fitness and athletic space, is really pay attention to how your name and likeness could be used on social media. Social media, it's a blessing and a curse nowadays because it can be used for good PR, it can be used for bad PR. But monitor, especially if you have a game and you have a big play, you might notice that people are coining terms to describe the play, and those are rich fodder for trademarks. If you see a hashtag trending on Twitter, for example, and it's got your name in it and maybe some creative phrase like goal, like beautiful goal or something, I'm not good at it because I don't come up with names. I help protect them, but you kind of get the idea. So look at social media.
I got a quick question related to that. So could you actually trademark a hashtag?
Yeah. So you're not a hashtag in my mind is just another version of it's not a version of a trademark. It's another vehicle where a trademark is used. It's just like a tagline, only it's used in a very distinctive form, you know, no spaces,
right?
Capitalizations. I mean, you wouldn't obtain a trademark on the hashtag itself. I mean, a savvy person would take what's after the hashtag and trademark that, and that would be broader because then you don't have to confine it to Twitter. Let's say, for example, like the Kyler Murray,
yeah, that Hail Murray thing, yeah,
Hail Murray. If that was like a hashtag. If I were Kyler Murray, I don't want the hashtag appearing on every single use of this. I want to put it on shirts, but I don't want the hashtag on there. I'll just mark Hail Murray and then put that. That'll be the trademark. And then
that's an interesting point here that I want to try and make sure I understand is he created the play, right? So he made this Hail Murray, if you will. Yeah. And so could someone else, if they wanted the trademark, let's because it was out on social, okay, it was on Twitter, and somebody who makes t-shirts said, wow, look at this, this is going to be great, I'm going to go trademark this Hail Murray right now, file it first, so to your point about filing first, and then let's say the day later, you know, he tries to file it, would he then not be able to use it because somebody went first?
Well, that's an interesting kind of scenario, and it does happen. And in that case, it depends on the mark itself. So if the mark includes some name of a person who's alive at the time, and that person is not themselves filing the trademark office more often than not will see that and flag it, and they'll issue what we call an office action, which is basically a refusal. And the basis would be that particular mark appears to include a person's name that is not the applicant. So they would get refused. And I would argue if I were Kyler Murray, I would oppose that. Even if it got past the examination process at the trademark office, I would oppose it. And I would say that this mark is based on my name and it should be refused registration on that basis. And then
he'd take it.
Yeah, then he would need to file it too.
I think
if you're an athlete and you see someone file right away, I would probably file my own application and send a cease and desist letter to that third party who filed. You see this all the time. I mean, trademark applications, like I mentioned earlier, you can file them yourself. You don't need an attorney. And a lot of people have been filing lately. That's why I think trademark filings since the COVID pandemic have
doubled.
I mean, the volume is incredible because everybody and their brother now they see something on social media or TV. They're like, oh yeah, I'm going to get trademark on that. It could be, you know, Nike it could include some kind of Nike trademark, and they think, well, I'll just put my own spin on it and I'll still get it. No, right.
Yeah.
No, it's still, yeah, it still has a Nike trademark, or it still has Kyler Murray's name in it,
right,
or Tom Brady. You know, you can't, you couldn't, if you were an enterprising business owner and you wanted to celebrate Tom's kind of coming to Tampa Bay and you wanted to call it Tampa Bay, you know, play on words there.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, you're not going to be able to do that because clearly, I mean, you pick the worst target, because obviously the trademark office will pick up on the fact that Tom Brady is a person. Right. You're not right. Tom Brady. So you're not going to get that through. So yeah, I think trademark athletes need to pay attention to that, how their trademark is used. Generally, also, I think I would tell them, look to the future, look 5-10 years down the road. What do you see yourself, you know, selling or using your name on in those 5 or 10 years?
Right.
You know, it's easy to look at merch. Less obvious uses are maybe business services or foundations or something, for example, or setting up a website and selling fitness plans based on your years in the NFL, for example.
Right.
I mean, something like that. I mean, it's a very, very long-term use, but I think you need to look at that. And yeah. Also, I think the last piece of advice I would give is keep your eye out for people that are using your name. Even if you haven't registered the trademark, you still have trademark rights potentially in your own name or a phrase that you've created. Obviously, you want to get those things trademarked because it gives you a lot more leverage to stop people from using it. But if you can't afford it, use it widely. Make sure people know that you consider it a trademark, even if you haven't filed the application for it. And you can do that by putting the little TM kind of superscript next to the name or the phrase. And if somebody's using that, you know, contact them early, because the earlier you contact somebody, the less likely they've already invested money and put, you know, ink to paper, so to speak, or ink to substrates if you're making shirts. And they're not going to be as entrenched, and they're going to at least feel a little, I guess, better about stopping their use because they haven't put all this money into it. But otherwise, you know, you could be getting into a protracted legal battle, and that's going to take time, and it's going to cost lots more money than if you just initially protected that particular mark with the trademark registration, or you reached out to this person early on and stopped them before they got too far down the road. I think that's the other piece of advice I'd offer.
All right. Well, that sounds good. A lot of good advice. A lot more to obviously think about for athletes when it comes to their name, image, and likeness. This has been really helpful, Justin. I hope athletes and the audience have really enjoyed this conversation, because it does bring up a lot of things. And I had no idea that there could be touchdown celebrations that could be trademarked. So that's pretty cool. Yep. Yeah, cutting edge stuff. So I really appreciate the time again. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Keep up all that great work and enjoy the sunshine out in Arizona.
All right, Greg. Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure talking with you. And hope your listeners found this to be useful information.
Absolutely. I'm Greg Glenn. We're glad you could tune in, and stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.